The first thing I do is remove the velvet bag holding the 7 orbs that make up Lorien's solar system. I think of Henri and how he watched the light glow and pulsate at Lorien's core, showing that the planet is still alive, albeit hibernating. I place the bag in Sam's hand. All three of us peer down into the chest. Something else is lit up.
What is that glowing?
Six asks. No idea. It never did that before. She reaches down and plucks a rock from the bottom of the chest. It's a perfectly round crystal, no bigger than a ping pong ball. And when she touches it, the light brightens even more. And then it fades and begins to slowly pulse. We watch the crystal, transfixed by the glow. Then suddenly, Six lets it drop to the floor. The crystal ceases to pulse and resumes its steady glow. Sam reaches down to pick it up.
Don't!
Six yells. He looks up confused.
Something doesn't feel right about it, she says.
What do you mean? I ask.
It felt like pinpricks against my palm. When I grabbed hold of it, I got a really bad feeling.
This stuff is my inheritance, I say. Maybe I'm the only one allowed to touch it. I bend down and carefully pick up the glowing crystal. Within seconds, it feels as if I'm holding a radioactive cactus. My stomach compresses, and acid climbs up my throat. Then I instantly toss the crystal onto a blanket. I swallow. Maybe I'm doing it wrong.
Maybe we don't know how to use it. I mean, you said Henri kept you from seeing inside because you weren't ready. Maybe you're still not ready.
Well, that would be pretty lame, I say.
This sucks, Sam says.
Six walks into the kitchen and returns with 2 towels and a plastic bag. She carefully grabs the glowing crystal with a towel and drops both into the bag, which he then wraps in a 2nd towel. You really think that's necessary? I ask. My stomach continues to gurgle. She shrugs.
I don't know about you, but the feeling I got when I touched it was bad news. Better safe than sorry.
What's left in the chest is everything comprising my inheritance, and I'm not really sure where to start. I reach in and grab an object I've seen before, the oblong crystal Henri used to spread the lumen from my hands to the rest of my body. It comes alive and bathes the dining room in its bright light. The crystal center begins swirling with what looks like smoke, twisting and turning back on itself, as I have seen it do before.
Now we're talking, Sam says.
Here, I say, giving it to him. The crystal falls inert when it transfers hands. I've already seen it. Also, inside the chest are a few smaller crystals, a black diamond, a collection of brittle leaves bound with twine, and a star-shaped talisman the same pale blue as the pendant around my neck, which tells me it's Lorelite, the rarest gem found only at Lorien's core. There's also a bright red oval bracelet and an amber-colored stone in the shape of a raindrop.
What do you think that is?
Sam asks, pointing to a flat, circular stone the same milky white color as a pearl that's stuck in the corner. Don't know, I say.
How about that?
He asks, this time pointing to a small dagger that looks to have a blade made of diamond. I lift it from the chest. The handle fits snug in my hand, as though it was made for it. And I suppose it was. The blade isn't more than 4 inches long, and just by seeing the way the light glints along its edge, I can tell it's far sharper than any razor one might find on Earth.
What about that thing?
Sam asks again, pointing to something else, and I have no doubt he'll ask the same question over and over until he's inquired about every object inside. Here, I say,
setting the dagger down and removing the 7 orbs in an effort to keep him occupied. Check this out. I blow on them, and tiny lights flicker across their surfaces. Then I toss them up in the air, and they instantly spring to life, spinning in orbit around the orange-sized sun in the center. It's Lorien's solar system, I say. 6 planets, 1 sun, and this one here, I add, pointing to the 4th orb, which remains the same various shades of ashen gray as the last time I'd seen it. Is Lorien, as it looks today, at this very moment. The glow at its center is what's left.
Wow, Sam says. NASA dudes would be crapping themselves right now looking at this.
And watch this, I say. Illuminating my right hand, I sweep the light over the orb, and all at once, the surface changes from its depressing gray tones to vibrant blues and greens of the forests and oceans. This is the planet as it was the day before the attack.
Wow,
Sam says again, staring in awe with his mouth hanging open. And while the rotating planets have him transfixed, I look back in the chest. Do you know what any of this is? Or what it does? I ask Six, who doesn't respond. I turn and see she's just as amazed as Sam by the solar system spinning 2 feet above the floor. Since Henri had told me they weren't part of my legacy, which means they weren't locked in the chest, I had wrongly assumed she'd seen them before. But it makes sense she hasn't. They can only be activated after the first legacy develops. Six, I say again. She comes back to reality, turns to me, and I find myself looking away once we make eye contact. Do you know what any of this stuff is?
Not really, she murmurs, running her hands over the stone's surfaces. This is the healing stone Henri and I used at the school, she says, pointing out a flat, black rock I've seen before. Then she freezes, a faint gasp escaping her lips. Sam and I exchange confused expressions. She lifts a pale yellow stone, its surface waxy and smooth, from the chest, and holds it up to the light.
Oh my God,
she marvels, flipping it over.
Tell me,
I prod. She looks me right in the eyes.
Zitharis, she says. It comes from our first moon.
She brings the small stone to her forehead, squeezing her eyes shut. The faint yellow shade of the stone darkens slightly. She opens her eyes and hands the stone to me. I frown and take it from her, my fingertips grazing the palm of her hand. Sam inhales sharply.
What the?
He looks terrified, groping for me like he's blind.
What's going on?
I ask, slapping Sam's hands away from my face.
You're invisible,
Six says quietly. I look down at my lap, and it's true. I've completely vanished. I drop the Zitharis on the floor like a hot potato and instantly become visible.
The Zitharis, Six explains, allows one guard to transfer a legacy to another, but only for a short period of time. An hour, I think, maybe 2. I can't say for sure. All you have to do is charge it by focusing your energy on the stone. Put it to your forehead, and bam, it's ready to go.
Charge it? Like a battery? Sam asks.
Exactly. And it won't start using the legacy until it's touched again.
I look at the stone.
Sweet.
Looks like somebody other than you is taking a trip into town.
And somebody other than you is going to be resistant to fire,
she says playfully. If you're nice to me, then it's definitely a possibility, I say.
Sam picks the stone up and clenches his entire body in deep concentration. Nothing happens.
Oh, come on, he says to the stone. I promise to use it for the power of good. No girls' locker rooms, I swear.
Sorry, Sam, Six says. I'm pretty sure this stuff only works on us.
He sets the Zitharis down, and we dig through the rest of the chest to see if anything else is activated by touch. But after an hour of studying and holding all 17 artifacts, blowing hot air on them, squeezing them tightly, nothing else engages, aside from the glowing crystal wrapped in the towel, the larger oblong crystal with the smoky center, and the solar system still rotating above us. The healing stone, however, does cure the cuts and bruises Six has been stamping my body with.
Man, I've waited most of my life to open this thing, and now that I have, a lot of it seems useless to me, I say.
I'm sure their uses will reveal themselves in time, Six assures me. Things like this need to be slept on. It's usually when they've left your mind completely that answers finally come.
I nod, looking back at everything lying around the chest. Six is right. Forcing an answer only guarantees that no answer will come. Yeah, maybe some of it only activates with further legacies. Who knows? I say with a shrug. I put everything back inside, feeling compelled to keep the glowing crystal covered with the towel. I leave the solar system out, which continues its circular march. I close and lock the chest and carry it down the hall.
Don't be discouraged, John, Six says behind me. As Henri said, you're probably not ready to see it all yet.
Chapter 14. I can't sleep, partly because of the chest. For all I know, one of the gems inside could give me power to morph into different creatures like Bernie Kosar, or one could create an iron barrier around me, impossible to penetrate by enemy attack. But how'll I know without Henri? I feel sad, defeated. But mostly, I can't stop thinking about Six. Can't stop picturing her face hovering inches above mine, or the sugary scent of her breath, or the way the setting sun had made her eyes glow. In that moment, I had an irrepressible desire to stop training and to simply wrap my arms around her and squeeze her down onto me. A pang of longing to do that, even now, hours later, has anchored itself in my heart, and that's what's really keeping me up. That and the overwhelming guilt I feel about my attraction to her. The person I'm supposed to be longing for is Sarah. There's too much on my mind to expect sleep. Too many emotions. Pain, desire, confusion, guilt. I lie another 20 minutes before giving up on sleep. I whip aside my blanket and pull on a pair of pants and a gray tee. Bernie Kosar follows me from the room and down the hallway. I poke my head into the living room to see if Sam's asleep. He is, wrapped up in a blanket on the floor like a worm in a cocoon, and I turn and walk back. Six's room is directly across the hall from mine, and her door's ajar. I stand looking at it, and I hear Six rustle on the floor.
John?
She whispers. I cringe, and my heart immediately races. Yeah, I reply, still standing outside.
What are you doing?
Nothing, I whisper. I can't sleep.
Come in,
she says. I push open the door. Her room is pitch black, and I can't see anything.
Is everything okay?
Yeah, everything's fine, I say. I barely turn on my lumen, and the faint glow is like a nightlight. I keep my eyes off her and on the carpet. Just too much on my mind, you know. I was maybe thinking of going for a walk or a run or something.
Well, that's kind of dangerous, don't you think? Don't forget,
You're on the FBI's 10 most wanted list with a fat reward on your head, she says.
I know, but it's still dark out and you could make us invisible, couldn't you? I mean, that's if you wanted to come along.
I increase the lights on my hands and I can see Six sitting on the floor with a couple of blankets over her legs and her hair's pulled back with loose strands falling around her face. She shrugs, then tosses the blankets aside and stands. She's wearing black yoga pants and a white tank. I can't stop myself from staring at her bare shoulders. I look away when I'm hit with the absurd suspicion that she can feel my eyes on her.
Sure,
she says, pulling the band from her hair and rewrapping her ponytail. I always have a hard time sleeping, especially on the floor.
I hear that, I say.
Do you think we'll wake up Sam, though?
I shake my head. She responds with a shoulder shrug and lifts her hand. I take it immediately. Six disappears, but my hand still glows, and I can see her foot imprints in the carpet. Then I extinguish my hand, and we tiptoe from the room and down the hallway. Bernie Kosar follows, and when we reach the living room, Sam lifts his head from the floor and stares right at us. Six and I stop, and I hold my breath to remain silent. I think about Sam's obvious crush on Six, and how he'd be devastated if he saw us holding hands.
Hey, Bernie, he says groggily, then drops his head and rolls over with his back facing us.
We remain silent for a few seconds, and then Six leads us across the living room and into the kitchen to leave through the back door. The night is warm and filled with the sounds of crickets and swaying palm fronds. I inhale deeply as Six and I walk hand in hand. I find it odd that Six's hand seems so small and delicate in mine, despite her amazing physical strength. I love the way it feels. Bernie Kosar races through the heavy brush lining the gravel drive, while Six and I stroll silently down its center. It dead ends into a narrow road, and we turn left.
I can't stop thinking about what you went through, I finally say.
But what I would rather tell her is that I can't stop thinking about her.
Being held prisoner for half a year, having to witness Katerina being... well, you know what I mean. Sometimes I forget it happened. And other times, it's all I can think about for days. She replies.
Yeah, I say, drawing out the word.
I don't know. I guess it goes without saying that I miss Henri, and it kills me that he's gone. But after hearing your story, I realize how lucky I really am. I mean, I got to say goodbye to him and everything. Plus, he was there while I went through my first legacies. I can't imagine going through that alone like you did. It was really, really hard, that's for sure. I could have used her the day I started to gain my invisibility legacy. I could have used her even more for girl talks when I was growing up. They were pretty much our parents on Earth, right?
Right, I say.
What I find funny is that now that Henri's gone, the things I remember most about him are the things I usually hated. Like... when we would leave someplace behind, and we'd drive for hours and hours and hours down the highway headed someplace I'd never even heard of, when all I wanted to do was just get out of the car. Now the conversations we had on those trips are the ones I remember most. Or when we started training in Ohio, and he made me do the same thing over and over and over again. I hated it so much, you know? Now I can't look back on any of it without smiling. Like, one time after my telekinesis finally came, we were training in the snow, and he was throwing all these objects so I could learn to deflect them. I had to redirect them back at the source, and he heaved a meat tenderizer really hard at me, and I used its own velocity to whip it back at him, and at the very last second, he had to jump headfirst into the snow to keep from being hit, I say, smiling to myself. The pile of snow
was actually a snow-covered rosebush with all these thorns. You would not believe the noise he made. Stuff like that